Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Thank you, Big Daddy Abel. Well, tonight we're simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday Party. So whether you're listening here on the G-Zone or if you're on Facebook or Twitter, please enjoy. We're looking for a lot of fun tonight. As always, when we do the Thirsty Thursdays, we like to start off with a prayer. So if everybody, you don't mind, in the name of Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Lord, may we be quick to listen and slow to speak and to judge. A proud attitude so easily infects our lives. Give us a study of humility that reflects your heart and love. Amen. All right. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Just a few shout-outs. Last night I had Leighton Green and Tori Allen on last night. We were talking about it was a thriller, mystery, crime night. It was a ton of fun. I want to thank those gentlemen for being on last night. And next week, just a shout-out as we are getting into the evening and the festivities. My notes here next week, two of my guests on different days, Flora Regatta and Tracy Krause. Tracy joins me on Tuesday, Flora on Monday. Tracy Krause will be at 4 p.m. On Tuesday. That should be a fun conversation. I'm sure Flora's is going to be wonderful as well. Flora's got her devotional out right now. Tracy, of course, has multiple titles in a variety of genres. As far as an overview of this evening, a lot going on here. First post coming up at 8:05. Patty J. Smith has an interview with Joy Ross Davis. And if you enjoy author blogs, I strongly suggest you go to Patty J. Smith's. That is, if you're looking forward on Blogger, it is Gridiron Granny. Very easy to find. She's a prolific blogger. At least she's up at least once a day, I would say. Pretty awesome blog, variety of stuff on there. Other things we got going, there's 8 new titles in the Helping Hands Press store. Now, if you're on the Facebook page, everybody's navigating around doing stuff, two of the places we're going to be discussing this evening, if you look on the left-hand side, underneath the banner where it says About, you can see right there that it says please visit our website at, and that's myhelpinghandspress.com. You click on that link, there's a little shopping cart guy right there, and you click on that, you go right into the HHP store, and that's where the titles are that we'll be discussing this evening amongst the others there. Then the link below that is the Helping Hands Press blog, which has been doing rather well. We'll get into that a little bit later. There's been some new additions to the blog as far as the sidebars go, and we'll talk about that a little later too. But if you click on those two things, have them open, you'll be able to follow along with me tonight and have some fun. Things we got going here. It's going to be a reading sample for June Foster. We have a new release for paperback for an audiobook, for Pamela Horner. We're going to show the full jacket cover for Carolyn Orovitz's literature guides. That is in the HHP store already for pre-sale. Michelle Trossel and Sandy Sieber both have ebook bundles that are for sale right now in the store. Featured audiobook this week is James J. Griffin's Faith in the Law. We're going to talk about that in a little while. Cover comparison for Marcia Lee Laycock. We're going to play a new audio sample for Peggy Bland Pfeiffer for the Sweetwater River series. We have some interesting author posts up this evening. Linda Mizucci, Tracy Krause, Tony Hilling. And at the end of the show today, we're going to be playing George Taylor's podcast for this week. He's talking about historical stories, and one of them he's going to be focusing on will be C.Q. Scafidi's Bleeding Kansas from the Outlaw and Chain series. Other blog posts that you'll find tomorrow in the HHP blog will be by Patty J. Smith, Carolyn Orovitz, and Melanie Jasky. And we'll get into stuff that's going on next week because the next 2 weeks there's a slew of stuff, and we're going to need to really go over that. Let's see what's coming up here. Okay. Looks like Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's in the house. June Foster. Linda Mizucci. I saw Joy Ross Davis. Let's see. Well, Sue's in the house. Looks like Joseph Max Lewis is here as the Diaries of Pontius Pilate. He is Joseph Max Lewis's The Diaries of Pontius Pilate is this week's featured paperback. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. He's got some serious action going on with that, which is pretty cool. But while folks are taking a look at the interview on Patty's blog with Joy Ross Davis, I'd like to go over some of the stuff. I'm gonna scoot around a little bit tonight as we have stuff, different stuff going on, primarily because as we play George's podcast at the end of the broadcast, I want to make sure I touch all the bases here. So I'm going to be floating around in different places this evening. What I want to do is right now, before I get into reading some of June Foster's blog post coming up, I want to read a little bit of Tony Helling's. Tony Helling, he has a blog post called "I Thought the World Was Bleak Until ... Now this is Tony Helling, his blog post. "Have you ever started reading a book, enjoyed it, but had to put it down? A few summers ago, I started to read the celebrated Game of Thrones by J.R.R. Martin. I was in Vernon, British Columbia on holiday and managed to read about 250 pages or so before I set it down. It was an interesting read. The characters came alive and I was dying to find out more about the plot. But it was just too dark, for a holiday in Vernon anyway. I'm fairly familiar with medieval English history, and Martin seemed to use this epoch as a model for his fantasy novel. The story is like a replay of the War of the Roses between the rival houses of Lancaster and York, but with one difference. Imagine such a time without any of the moderating influences of the Christian faith, and you have the Game of Thrones. It's a novel about a fallen world with fallen heroes and villains where there is no possibility of redemption. Why? Because the Redeemer is absent. Perhaps in this work, Martin has hinted at our own post-mortem uber-existentialist generation, where he proposes that every last deity has died and the landscape reveals an unyielding, unforgiving blackness." "Objection, Your Honor," I say, as I tentatively rise up, as John Mortimer would put it, on my hind legs, and I thought Ada Stamen was dark. "Mr. Martin has outdone me in bleakness. You see, I have this naive penchant for happy endings. I am such a wuss. I have to find the good somehow. The voice of Ada Stamen is slavery, betrayal, infant sacrifice, battles with where innocents are slaughtered, fallen heroes and villains too. It even boasts a mythical beast that has a taste for human flesh, but it has something more. The Geatish Mare, the Holy One of the Blanderwort, the god of Ada Stamen. I know it's all that god stuff again. As one lawyer friend said to me, why don't you just grow up, Tony, accept that there's nothing? I guess it's because I believe there's something, or someone. And I just had to put him in Ada Stamen as the main character. And what's with all this butch stuff anyway? We pop out of the womb helpless, squalling and squawking, and we exit stage left, still depending on our caregivers with more questions than answers. Yeah, Homo sapien is really tough. Right, anyway, rant over with. I'm determined to finish Game of Thrones, so I suppose it depends on your worldview. Mine is biblical. And like most readers, I took a sneak peek to the end of the instruction manual. And guess what? There's a happy ending. So if you pick my book up, please don't put it down. Unless it's to go grab the Haagen-Dazs. Tony is a retired pastor, lawyer, and writer. He was born in Glasgow, Scotland, and now makes his home in Western Canada. The Voice of Ada Stamen is his first novel. You can reach him at, there's his Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. Besides Tony's series, Voice of Ada Stamen, he is part of Book 3 of the Uplifting Devotionals, and he also has three songs in the Helping Hands Press store. So the songs are nice. Maybe what I'll do is I'll try to play one again tonight. And that was Tony Helling's post. If you'd like, feel free to leave a comment on the blog post itself, or if you want to go into the contact area, feel free to leave a comment and Tony will respond. Of course, later on in the evening at 9:20, it will appear on the Facebook page. Okay, let's see. Next post up should be it's going to be coming up in a second, is the next Uplifting Devotionals. It is book four. That should be out. The ebook should be out next week. It's in pre-sale right now, or it should be out in the next 2 weeks. It is in pre-sale right now in the Helping Hands Press store. As far as the folks that the authors involved, doing this off the top of my head here, Murray Pure, Patty J. Smith, Michelle Huey, Flora Regatta, Sue Badeau, all five of them. It's going to be a very large uplifting devotional. Probably going to clock in somewhere around, just trying to add up words, 40, right around 70,000 words devotional in that Uplifting Devotional 4. So if you want to go to the Helping Hands Press store, just click on the link and go ahead and pre-order the ebook. The paperback will be out in June. So there you go. We have pre-sale ones on the 28th. Marcelle Laycock has a comment on that. Way to go, team. She will be part of book five, along with book five. Just from what I understand, should be Flora, Patty, Michelle, and Marcia. Marcia has a new devotional coming out. That's part of the cover comparison in a little bit. Okay, let me try to push ahead here. I want to do Tracy Krause. Her blog post is going to pop up at 9:10. And so pretty interesting. It is called Lessons from a Life of Writing. What I'm going to do on the other side of this, I'm going to play Pam Horner's audiobook sample for Rats Pumpkins and other stuff. That'll be the audiobook sample for that. It is available right now in Helping Hands Press store for $2.99. But let me get to Tracy Krause's Lessons from a Life of Writing. I've been writing for almost 30 years. Although my writing life has changed dramatically in this time, I recognize some major lessons I learned. Here are some things that writing has taught me. Number one, if it's important enough, you'll make the time. We all seem to live time-starved lives, but it's interesting to note that if it's really important to you, something you are truly passionate about, you'll somehow make time for it. Number two, nothing worth having comes easy. This saying is especially true when it comes to writing. Writing is hard work. Few people, if any, sit down and write the next great novel or screenplay without a ton of research, rewriting and revising. It just doesn't happen overnight, no matter what you've seen in the movies. Number three, perseverance and tenacity are a must. This is true during the writing process and afterwards. Somewhere in the middle of your manuscript, you might lose interest or inspiration. Push through. There's nothing quite as gratifying as finishing that project. These lessons and perseverance will be invaluable if and when you decide to submit your work. It took me 16 years to finally finish my first manuscript, and several more years, and literally hundreds of rejections before my anything was accepted for publication, which leads nicely into the next lesson. Number four, rejection makes you strong. So does criticism. Both of these, when done constructively and honestly, can teach you more than any book or curse. Rather than wallow in despair, take criticism to heart and do something about it. The saying goes, what doesn't kill you makes you strong. This is true. The moment a writer thinks he or she knows it all is the moment he or she stops growing. Number five, passion supersedes perception. In other words, write what you feel called to write. I've learned that I must write from my heart. The stories that I feel passionate about and in a style I am comfortable with, not what someone else says I should write. Obviously, one has to think about audience, but not to the point of compromise. For me, this would defeat the purpose of writing entirely. I'm not in it for the fame and certainty, not for the fortune, and certainly not for the fortune. I write from a piece of personal need to express myself. I've been blessed in the last 8 years to see several novels, plays, and short stories reach publication. However, that short amount of success was preceded by 20-plus years of sweat equity with a healthy dose of pain thrown in. There was no easy road to publication, and that's all right with me. I've learned that writing is such an integral part of my life that with or without public recognition or accolades, I'd still be pounding away at the keys, hopefully for another 30 years or so. Tracy Krause is an author, playwright, artist, director, and teacher. She grew up in a small town, Saskatchewan, and received her Bachelor of Education degree in Saskatoon with majors in art, English, and history. She has lived in many interesting places in northern Canada, many of them north of the 60th parallel. She is currently a full-time high school teacher of art, drama, and English and history. She is currently working on several novels and stage plays and resides with her husband in beautiful Tumbler Ridge, B.C. Now, you can catch up with Tracy on her website, Goodreads, Facebook author page, and Pinterest. So that is Tracy Krause's blog post. She has a lot of interesting stories in a variety of genres. I strongly suggest anything that she has written. Let's see where we're at. Okay, right now, the blog post for June Foster has popped up. What I would like to do is play Pam Horner's audiobook sample. And on the other side of that, we'll catch up with June as soon as we possibly can. But right now, let me play the audio sample for Rats and Pumpkins, Pamela Horner's audiobook.
Hey,
what?
Want to know a secret?
Of course, everyone wants to know a secret.
Remember those fairy tales your mom told you as a kid?
You mean like Cinderella?
Yeah, them's the ones.
What about them?
They're not real.
Of course they're not real. They're fairy tales.
What I mean is that your mom, my mom, they got them all wrong.
All wrong? What do you mean? This is Mother's Day coming up. You better not be telling me that my mom lied.
Of course she didn't lie. She just didn't know any better.
Any better about what?
About Cinderella. About Little Red Riding Hood. And Rumpelstiltskin. And how Disney-fied they are.
What do you mean?
Well, I can't tell you everything right now. Not enough time. But author Pamela Horner and Helping Hands Press have spilled the beans on all of it.
So you can't tell me. I have to buy something, right? This is a come-on, right?
No, it's real. But you do have to at least listen to something.
What?
Listen to this sample.
Sample of what?
The sample of Pamela Horner's book, Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors.
Okay, play it.
Don't you never ask.
Over here. No, here, in the stone fireplace. Yeah, that's right. Now I have your attention. You say that you're looking for some truth, if truth there be, behind some of the fairy tales that you've been told or watched all of your lives. And here I am. But I know what you must be thinking. How cliche is it that there is this blonde who is going to claim to get mistreated by the steps, and now you catch me in the hearth cleaning out the ashes? Asked a stunning blonde as she stepped out of the huge stone hearth while wiping her filthy hands on an apron. Shaking back her long, thick mane of hair, the beautiful young girl placed her hands on her hips.
I know. Let's get this out of the way, shall we? Mental eye roll here. It's Cinderella, and you know the drill. She works hard, gets stiffed all the time by her stepmother and stepsisters, but always takes it on the chin. What a trooper! Or wimp, depending on your point of view in life. Then things take a turn. Magic happens. Fairy dust gets scattered about on the downtrodden but well-deserving Cinderella, who then gets to wear all these beautiful clothes. She has all these woodland creatures scampering at her feet and ends up with a hot prince. Blah, blah, blah. Poor girl. Wah, how bad can it be?
The young girl shook her head as she walked over to the long wooden table and sat down on one of the bench-style chairs. Her beautiful blue eyes were serious as she continued earnestly.
This is what I've been trying to tell you. It's been a huge, enormous cover-up. Between the Brothers Grimm and the Walt They Lived Happily Ever After Disney, your perception of me is wrong, totally off base. You have no idea, she said, shaking her head emphatically. Let me try to clear this up for you. I think I have a small window of opportunity before my stepmother, whom I lovingly refer to as the Grim Reaper, and her two awesome daughters, whom I have secretly dubbed Frick and Frack, get back from town. Let's see where to start, she mused, chewing on a fingernail. Oh, I know! Take the night of the infamous ball. Everyone is familiar with that part of the story, or at least they think they are. Here's what really went down. Once upon a time, in a kingdom far away... Ha! Psych! Just checking to see if you were really paying attention. Okay, for real. Here's what really happened. Looking back, I will say, even for me, that day had been a tough one. Cinderella tiredly blew a lock out of her eye and tucked it into her kerchief. Jeez, she thought, looking at her hands that were red and chapped from the washing. If those lazy cows don't hurry up and squeeze their substantially large derrieres into those too tight dresses, I'm going to pound them into them myself. Then I will place my foot on their worthless spines and tighten their corsets until their faces turn. Oh, hello, stepmother. Is there anything you need? Bunny, yes, you heard that correctly. Now do you see why I call her the Grim Reaper? Bunny had walked quietly into the kitchen. She was a tall, large-boned woman with salt-and-pepper hair that was so thin that her pink scalp peeked through the scraggly strands. Her permanent scowl had dug unflattering, deep furrows between her eyebrows, and Cinderella could count on one hand the number of times she had seen her stepmother's thin lips try to crack into a smile, which always came off as a grimace one might see on a jack-o'-lantern. Bunny had tried to creep in quietly so that she could catch Cinderella slacking off, and her face tried unsuccessfully to settle into the unfamiliar lines of a smile as she saw the girl resting on a bench.
"Well, Cinderella, I was hoping if you weren't too busy, you could come upstairs and help Brittany and Buffy get ready for the ball."
"That's Pumpkins and Other Rumors. It's available from Helping Hands Press and narration by George. George Taylor tells this amazing story, and you just gotta hear it. The reviewers are even raving about it. A wonderfully humorous take on well-known fairy tales. Pamela Horner's witty writing style keeps the reader wanting more. And Pamela Horner brings the characters to light in a humorous and entertaining way. Ms. Horner has a knack for the whimsical. Huh, she's actually telling the truth. So get your copy now before the NSA pulls the plug on this whole operation. That's Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors from Helping Hands Press and narration by George. Oh, and don't call me. I'll find you."
All right, we're back. You're listening to the G-Zone. We are simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday Party. If you're on Facebook or Twitter, welcome, and hope everybody's having fun tonight. Just a recap of what we've been doing. We've read the opening prayer. Folks have been checking out some of the posts. First one was for Patty J. Smith's interview with Joy Ross Davis. We discussed the authors that are in the Uplifting Devotional before. That's in pre-sale right now, as of today, in the Helping Hands Press store. I haven't read the reading sample for June Foster's book yet. We just played the audio sample for Pamela Horner, but I did read Tony Helling's post and Tracy Krause's, and there is a comment on Tony Helling's post in the Helping Hands Press blog. Let's see, we got a caller here. Hello, who's this? Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. This is Carolyn Oravitz.
Oh, how you doing? You called in at a good time. You have your post is about to pop here at 8:25. The full jacket cover is being revealed tonight, but it's you have to go to the Helping Hands Press store to see it because you're literature guides, the complete series, grades 3 through 8, will be available in paperback. The pre-sale is going on right now. Tell us a little bit about the literature guides, if you would, please.
Oh, sure. Well, these guides are supplementary materials. They're very helpful supplementary materials for children, for teachers of grades 3 to 8. And I think they're very popular with homeschoolers. They're basically chapter-by-chapter questions and end-of-book multiple-choice tests for various selected books. What I feel that makes them so special is we spend a lot of time choosing the books, and we included some adapted classics such as Robinson Crusoe, Prince and the Pauper, Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe. We really tried to find books that would be very interesting to children. We also included some contemporary books such as the I Survive series and Magic Treehouse series, and we included some Helping Hands Press books like Cindy Noonan's Dark Enough to See the Stars, which is a fantastic book, and Marcia Hubler's Keystone Stables books. So, again, I think what makes the literature guide so special is the choice of books that we used. And excuse me. The books really teach reading. The guides teach reading skills such as vocabulary development, comprehension skills, and they're an advantage to reluctant readers because reluctant readers are motivated to read when they have books about interesting characters and exciting plots. But they're also great for gifted readers, for the average reader. And the guidelines are like grades 3 to 8, but they're just like suggested grades. So if a student is reading at grade level or below grade level or above grade level, that could be adjusted. So anyhow, they're exciting, and hopefully people will enjoy using these.
That's pretty cool. How many books in each grade level basically do you cover? Is there like 5, 6, 7 books that you have for each grade level?
There are 6 books for grades 3 and 4, 6 for 5 and 6, and 6 for 7 and 8.
Nice. So you go over some pretty heavy stuff in this grouping. Now, do you have worksheets and stuff on the back for folks to do with their kids?
Yes. And it's good because it allows for independent work. I mean, the student can really, this works really well for homeschoolers or just as supplementary materials for schools. And the students can basically work by themselves, and then parent or teacher can check their questions, the end of chapter questions. So there's questions at the end of each chapter which causes them to go back and maybe search for the answer, so they're not like just breezing through the book. It causes them to pay better attention to details in the stories. Then the end of the book tests are multiple choice, so that's something that they can work on and by themselves, and then have the teacher or parent check that for them. So I actually just used a couple of them this week with some students of my own. One very reluctant reader. And this week, she just really got into this one book that we were working on and was disappointed to put the book down at the end of the chapters. And like, oh, do we have to stop now? So, I mean, that's what you want to hear. That's what you want kids to do. You want them to love reading. And she did very well with the chapter questions and in the book test. So and we're moving on to the next one. So anyhow, we're hoping that people will take advantage of these and enjoy them.
That's nice. Were there any criteria for you picking the books that you used in here? Was it anything special? Because I'm going to have to own up to the fact that I probably didn't read 16 out of the 18 of them.
Okay.
So I might have to page through this thing. But then again, I like multiple guest tests. I usually do well with them. Yeah, are all the answers A, by the way? Is that the way it works?
Well,
no,
actually,
that's not the key. Okay. Well, you know,
no.
I'd like to get 100.
I think I heard somewhere where there's more B answers to multiple choice tests than anything else, but don't know if that's true. But no, the books that I chose, and I have been teaching for years, I chose books because I read them and I enjoyed them, and I know that my students enjoyed them. And again, I think if you have a great plot, you have interesting characters, the kids are going to love the stories. I mean, sometimes stories are written, reading books are written so that you can introduce skills. So a story might just focus on a skill like learning compound words or learning cause and effect. So it's almost like they sacrifice plot just to get these skills taught. But I'm a firm believer that students can learn to read and learn all of the comprehension skills and all of the necessary vocabulary that they need to learn while enjoying reading. So, we spent a lot of time deciding what we thought would be like the best books for this series. And, tried and tested because I've used them myself, and I know they're very popular books. They're often taken out of libraries as first choice books. So that's what we based our decision on.
Awesome. Now, if you're on the Facebook page or on Twitter, what just popped up is the ebook bundle for Michelle Trossel. She has the Wondering About Weather series, Rain and Snow. Both of her current ebooks are part of this bundle. You can get both stories combined in this bundle for $1.49. Just click on a link for the Helping Hands Press store, and you can pick it up there. A little later in the broadcast, we're going to be talking about Sandy Sieber's bundle. It's the same deal. Sandy has two books, The Flying Banana and Fake Hops Raina. Both books combined, e-books, will be $1.49. It's in the Helping Hands Press store right now. Wondering About Rain and Snow. Both really cool stories with a lot of great information in them. Michelle uses a fictitious world to tell about it. I read a little bit of it a couple shows ago, if you go back to the Thirsty Thursday things. If you just indulge me for a minute, if you go on the blog, each week I've done a few things here talking about the blog. Yeah, here's the top 10 countries right now the top 10 countries that view the Helping Hands Press, and there's been some major changes here. The United States is still number one. Coming in at number two by a wide margin, Russia. Kind of blows my mind. Russia is number two. Three, and it's really, really boosted up. Number three in a strong position is Canada, which before was kind of vacillating at the bottom. But right now, Canada number three. Holding steady and large. Number four, Germany. Five, France. Number six, United Kingdom. Seven, Slovakia. Number eight, Netherlands. Number nine, Venezuela. And number 10, Ireland. Now, earlier today, I want to say as late as 3, 4 o'clock, Singapore was number nine. So something happened in the last 5-6 hours. That pushed Venezuela and Ireland over Singapore, but that's a pretty interesting development. And if you're following along as far as the stats go here, pretty soon, probably by, if all goes well, sometime on Saturday, the Helping Hands Press blog will go over 500,000 views. Right now it's at 480,000, and it's... they've been getting some nice views on the blog. So if you do enjoy the blog, please use the contact form. Tell the folks why so you can get more of it. If there's something you don't like about the HHP blog that you think can be improved upon, please use the contact form and tell them that this is what part of Thirsty Thursday is about, listening to folks, having everybody learn, and listening to the readers. As far as Michelle Trossel goes, some of the comments being made here. Joy Ross Davis says kids and parents should love this. Pam Horner says this sounds awesome. Michelle says, anyone know a child in grade 3 to 5 about to begin summer vacation? This is a fun way to keep their brains engaged. She also says, so excited to have both books offered together. Now I need to teach my bunnies, Jack and Lucy, how to read. Now, if you have been on the blog, the Helping Hands Press blog, you've seen Michelle's blog posts about the bunnies. I have read them here on the air, and they're pretty cool. Tomorrow, Carolyn, maybe you want to give everybody a little preview. You have a blog going up tomorrow. What is your blog post about?
Actually, I don't have that right in front of me now. That was, okay, let's see.
Is it about grammar?
Oh, yes. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I was reading some books about that were written for children, and they were written in very poor grammar. Things like, it was the funnest day and the bestest, and some of the authors that wrote these books say that, well, kids know that this is poor grammar. Unfortunately, they don't. I mean, if the book says, me and my friends are having the funnest day, well, they said that kids talk that way and they know that that's improper grammar, but kids don't know that. So I'm a firm believer that you can get a really great kid's story across without having to resort to poor grammar. So a lot of teachers agree with me.
Interesting. What just popped up right now? James J. Griffin is the featured audiobook this week. If you're on the Helping Hands Press blog, there is a tab for featured audiobooks. Just started last week. Murray Pure's The Name of the Hawk was the first one featured. James J. Griffin's Faith in the Law is this week's, and a very successful story for Jim. He was unable to make it tonight. He had a pretty early day with the horses and doing some of the stuff that he did, which is, and he does a lot of good work with the therapy horses and his dog and stuff. So hopefully Jim's getting a break here. But yeah, he's a featured audiobook this week, Faith in the Law, Volume 1, The Ambush. A little later in the show, we'll be talking about the featured paperback, the other tab. That is The Diaries of Pontius Pilate by Joseph Max Lewis. I believe he's gotten probably well over 100 reviews for this novel. It's available in ebook and paperback. Very well-reviewed story. Separation of church and state, the same. And folks are really loving the current story, Baghdad Burning, which will be out in paperback very soon. Now, you're listening to the G-Zone. We're simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday Party. If you're on Facebook and Twitter, thanks for joining us. I'm on with Carolyn Orovitz right now as my guest. Carolyn, what kind of stuff are you noticing on a Facebook page? Anything catching your interest?
Let's see. Oh, yeah, I think they're all interesting. And I love that narration. I thought that was really cute. It was really well done.
Yeah, I need to, on the other side of this, we're at 8:38. Coming up next is the cover comparison from our Celia Laycock's new devotional. And then I think what I want to do as the cover comparison is going on, I want to play the audio sample for Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples. Because then after that, we get into another busy part of the evening before we play George Taylor's podcast to take us home this evening. Where was I? I forgot where I was. This happens to me every Thursday night. There's so much going on. My mind just goes blank at times. Coming soon. Next week, we are going to have stories and other stuff related to Tracy Krause, Mark Miller, Mark Venturini, the Web Surfer series, Downsized Literally, the new Posse series, Robert Kennard. There's going to be a few other announcements next week. Next week's Thirsty Thursday is going to be way over full. We're probably going to have a lot of extra blog posts for that I'll have to discuss on air. And it's going to be an extremely busy Thursday night. Not that this evening's anything bit of a dog. Other stuff, we have Murray Pure's novel coming out. So it's going to be pretty crazy here. Let's see. Do we get to 8:40? What I want to do right now, Carolyn, if you don't mind, I need to play the audio sample of Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's Sweetwater River series. I know this is narrated by narration by George. He is a voice actor, narration by George Taylor. And let me see if I can find it on my board.
Okay, great.
Carolyn, I want to thank you for being on tonight. I appreciate
you
talking
welcome.
About
thank
your
you
literature guides. Your blog post will be up tomorrow. It'll be up on Facebook and Twitter tomorrow, as well as the blog. Everybody, Carolyn Orvitz. Thank you, Carolyn, for being here this evening.
Okay, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure now. We're going to switch over to George Taylor from Narration by George, narrating Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer.
Helping Hands Press, narration by George and author Peggy Bland Pfeiffer, take you back to Sweetland in the novel Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples. Rosine and Mike Carson have legally adopted 4 foster care teenage daughters, giving them a forever family they had never known before. But after only a year with the Carsons, one by one, Veronica, Shira, Melanie, and Misty reach adulthood, venturing out to start new lives of their own, leaving the house along the banks of the Sweetwater River in Sweetland. Rosine is proud of the adults they are becoming, but also heartbroken as she and Mike face an empty nest. She soon will see just how deep the girls' roots are to their riverside home. In the Sweetwater River series, these 6 lives continue to connect in some unexpected ways. In Volume 1, Ripples, Rosine sheds past burdens, while the same types of burdens threaten Mike. Shira's study of music takes an unexpected turn, and we meet Trent, New Beckton's veterinarian, whose interests include Veronica. Listen to this sample from Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer. Your narrator is George Taylor. On a balmy Friday evening in late April, Rosine Gentry Carson stood at her bedroom window facing the Sweet River mountain range, a view that had greeted her every evening for over 50 years. Tonight, the setting sun cast a glow of peachy golden rays through the limbs of freshly budded hardwood trees and highlighted the new green growth on the evergreens. The Sweetwater River, dividing her property 50 yards away, reflected the glorious colors from the sunset as it rolled by, calmer now that winter had bid Sweetland its welcome farewell. Her purposeful glance at the small stone cairn along the river's edge shot her heart with the familiar pang of loss. The cairn marked the spot where, 33 years ago, her 3-year-old son toppled into the river and was swept away by the rushing, frigid waters from the mountain's snow runoff. She waited for the expected tears, but none came. Time had dulled the pain, but the sorrow of her loss would never go away. Now she inhaled the delicate fragrance of lily of the valley that wafted up from below the open window. When she had planted those tiny bulbs years ago, Ross had told her they'd never survive on the west side of the house. But they had, and spread, much to her delight. "How's my lovely Cherokee bride?" Mike Carson, Rosine's husband of almost 5 months and pastor of Sweetland Assembly of God Church, came up behind her and wrapped his arms around her waist. "Hi, Mike." She closed her eyes with a smile and leaned back into his embrace. "Just thinking about Robbie," she said. "That pile of stones on the riverbank used to be a place I avoided at all costs. I even refused to look at it. I resented Ross when he did that. I didn't want any reminders of my loss. Today, after all the years of bitterness, I find it oddly comforting. It connects me to that precious little boy and the man who fathered him." Mike's arms tightened around her. "I'm glad, Rosie. It sounds like you might be moving toward that closure everyone talks about." "Not quite, but I'm getting close." She turned in his arms to face him.
There's one more thing I need to do before I find complete peace.
And what's that?
Visit Robbie out at Rosebriar Cemetery. I haven't been back there since the day we buried him. It's time, and I'd like you and the girls to go with me.
She hesitated, her heart pounding.
Was she really ready for this? She'd felt certain about it a moment ago, but yes, it was long past time. Time to forgive herself and Ross. Time to visit the little boy who never had a chance to grow up. Like the little stone cairn beside the river, she had avoided confronting the past and the guilt she'd carried for too many years. But Mike's quizzical frown, while not exactly accusing, made her realize she had some explaining to do.
You might as well go ahead and ask that question I see on your face. You want to know how I avoided seeing Robbie's grave when I buried Ross. Am I right?
He nodded with a gentle smile. It had occurred to me, yes. I was a coward, Mike. Afraid to face my own guilt in Robbie's death. At Ross's gravesite, while Pastor Paul officiated, I kept my gaze averted, denying myself even one look at the grave next to Ross. After so many years of refusing to visit the cemetery, I felt unworthy to acknowledge it then, and that only piled more guilt on my shoulders. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, honey. I sensed you were carrying some heavy burdens, but I knew when you were ready you would tell me. I'm grateful you've chosen to share them with me now. Of course, the girls and I would be honored to make the visit with you. When would you like to go?
Tomorrow, she said with a firm nod, looking straight into Mike's eyes. Right after breakfast, before the girls head off into their weekend activities.
Good. He cupped her face with his hands and kissed her. I'm so proud of you, Rosie, and I love you with all my heart. Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples, by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer, is available through Helping Hands Press at myhelpinghandspress.com. Narration is by George Taylor, production by narrationbygeorge.com.
Sorry about that. I forgot to unmute myself. We're back. This is the G-Zone. We're simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday Party. If you're on Facebook or Twitter and or both, welcome, and I hope you're having a good time. Some stuff going on here. While we're listening to George handle narration duties on Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's Sweetwater River Ripples, folks have been trying to weigh in on Marcelli Laycock's cover for new devotional, Northern Reflections. And this is interesting. It's split. Folks are having a hard time trying to decide on A or B because they both have different feels to it, which is pretty cool. Murray's had some very interesting, Murray Pure has some very interesting insights. He started off the conversation. Unfortunately, they're both good. I see merit in both. Love the red on A. Love the mystical stars on B. Joseph Max Lewis, who is here tonight as the Diaries of Pontius Pilate. I'm with Murray. Can't choose. Both covers are great. Joy Ross Davis says, I have to go with B, even though A is eye-catching as well. But B is more appealing to me. Sue says, the one on the right, blue is a very more common color for devotional. Pam Horner, oh no, I like both. I love the glow in A and the celestial feel of B. Let's see, Michelle Austin Woody. I think A. The text is clearer and easier to read. Plus, it seems to better reflect the title and theme than just the stars in the sky. I can agree with a lot of these. Murray adds in another post, another comment, excuse me, the blue is more mystical. If you want that effect, the red cover puts us on Earth. All very interesting comments for this. New devotional, because it has some interesting things. Let's see if I can find any more replies as we get into it. Sorry about that, folks. Okay. Okay, what's coming up here? It is 8:49. What we're coming up on is a blog post for Linda Mizzucci. She is the author of Olivia's Journey, as well as Legacy of Grandpa's Grapevine. Here is her blog post. She poses the question, what is a hero? The dictionary defines a hero as someone who is admired for outstanding qualities or achievements. What defines an outstanding quality or achievement? Does outstanding mean beyond everyday life accomplishments? In today's world, we can rapidly name an actor, athlete, or musician we would call a hero. These people have accomplished or created something that many could never conceive. On the contrary, it is the non-heroes who experience life accomplishments every day, living with grace, ethics, and honesty. In my youth, I recall my heroes as the people who always protected me, taught me wrong from right, practiced what they preached, and loved me enough to give consequences for immoral actions. Living every day with grace, ethics, and honesty is difficult to achieve for the most strong and powerful, as we are reminded daily from television and other social media. My heroes never made the news or were viewed as strong and powerful. Their titles were dad, mom, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, neighbor, and teacher. They were my heroes not because of one outstanding achievement, but because of their consistent and unwavering dedication to all the small accomplishments, nurturing children who understood the value of learning every day with grace, ethics, and honesty was their greatest achievement. Philippians 4, 8, and 9. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable. If there is any excellence, if there is any worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Linda Mizzucci grew up in a small town in Connecticut. She first enjoyed creative writing in elementary school and continued to write short stories in high school. At college, she wrote a short story for a Christian marriage class and was told her writing was very similar to John Steinbeck. As an avid reader, she looks for books that inspire, educate, and use her imagination. Linda's books allow the reader to contemplate the importance of family, faith, values, and how the actions each person takes in life always affects other people. And if you follow down a little further, you'll see some links for Linda. You can check out her blog, also her Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest. So there you go. Let's see where are we at now? It is 8:52. Okay. On the other side of this, I'm just trying to refresh the Facebook page. Sometimes I don't get all this. Comments from Joseph Maxillus, The Diaries of Pontius Pilate. A hero is someone who risks their life to save the life or health of another. Other things are admirable, self-sacrificing, etc. Let's see. On Peggy Blind Pfeiffer's audiobook sample, Sue says, what a treat to listen to part of that. The story has my heart. Okay, let's go down and see if there's any other comments here on... Joy Ross Davis says, one of Murray's comments is very astute. Just going down here. Let's see. So a little recap of what we've been doing. Tonight we started off with the prayer. Patty J. Smith had an interview with Joy Ross Davis. The pre-sale has begun for the next uplifting devotional, which is book four. Sue Badeau, Flora Regatta, Michelle Huey, Patty J. Smith, and Murray Pure are the team on uplifting devotional book four. There's a reading sample for June Foster on Helping Hands Press blog. I played the audio sample for Pamela Horner's new release, the audiobook of Rats, Pumpkins, and other stuff. Let's see, we have Carolyn Orbitz. She was nice enough to call in here to the G-Zone and talk about her pending paperback, which is in Helping Hands Press store for her literature guides, the complete series, grades 3 through 8. Michelle Trossel. And at 9 o'clock, there's going to be a post coming up for Sandy Siever. They both have ebook bundles coming out tonight for Sandy's Both her Flying Banana and Fake Ops Reina are put together. That's for $1.49 you get both stories. And for Michelle Trossel, she has a Wondering About Weather series. You'll get both Wondering About Rain, Wondering About Snow for $1.49. They're both in a Helping Hands Press store right now, available for sale. Featured audiobook this week is James J. Griffin's Faith in the Law. I was just talking about the cover comparison for Marcelia Laycock. This hasn't happened in quite a while that we've had a deadlock here, which is pretty cool. And I can see the merits of all the comments, which is very interesting. So I guess we'll have to see what folks on Twitter have to say and Facebook as the week progresses. I think that's really interesting. Let me see if anything else is cycled here as I just refreshed everything. Where are we at? Okay, I just talked about Marcella. I just played the audio sample for Peggy Bland Pfeiffer. I just read the Linda Mizucci's post. Right now, Roberta Brocious, her presale starts for her ebook of Surviving Jamaica, which is a YA story. Her first book was Surviving Mima. Same characters are in Surviving Jamaica, and there are strong elements of humor. A lot of great stuff in Roberta's books. Very well received and reviewed. So if you have not read, Surviving Mima, please go ahead and check it out. The download presale is $2.99 for the ebook. That is available presale until May 28th. Let's see. Peggy Bland Pfeiffer weighs in on the cover. Depends. B, the blue one, looks like snow, but that's all I got. I did read that one. I'm sorry, everybody. Okay, we're just going to forge ahead here until we get some more comments. The featured paperback this week, if you're on the blog, you click on the featured paperback. I got to go all the way back up here. I can do this. There we are. Featured paperbacks. Click on the tab. You will see the cover for The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, Joseph Max Lewis' debut novel, which has been very well reviewed. If you go to Goodreads, Amazon, you will see a ton of five-star reviews. The Diaries of Pontius Pilate opens when a member of an archaeological team is murdered along the shores of the Dead Sea. We learn that the murderer and victim are both spies. Observing the expedition and grappling with the fact that the team has just discovered some controversial artifacts. In fact, archaeologist Kevin Elliott and his deputy, Jill Gates, have unearthed 20 copper scrolls etched with the results of Pontius Pilate's year-long criminal investigation into the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. They managed to open one scroll far enough to take a series of digital photographs of the writing and email them to a professor of ancient Latin for translation. Unaware of the scroll's content, Kevin and Jill are unprepared when they're caught between an ancient conspiracy of global power that's determined to destroy the scrolls, along with everyone connected to them, and a small fledgling volunteer group, the only force on Earth that stands between Kevin and Jill and a certain death. Now here's some of the reviews. Lewis has written a nail-biting thriller that jumps into action on page one and doesn't stop until you reach the back cover. Don't open this book unless you're sitting in a comfortable chair with good reading light, because you won't want to move. That's from Tom Lemons. Pontius Pilate Diaries would rock the world if discovered today. Lewis's characters are muscular, violent, dedicated, and faithful. Good and evil remain at war while an archaeologist possessing Pilate's scrolls is hunted down. Danny Bonavita. Joe Lewis and the Diaries of Pontius Pilate tantalize, as did Raiders of the Lost Ark. The archaeologists who discovered the diaries travel through a gauntlet to bring those records to the public. Don't wait. Follow them in their quest. Major Anthony F. Milovic. Okay. As far as Joseph Max Lewis's bio, he served as a member of an operational detachment in the U.S. Army 7th Special Forces Group, the storied Green Berets. During his service, Lewis received anti-terrorist training, and his detachment was tasked with special projects. Afterwards, he served as an instructor of Special Forces Qualification Course. Lewis attended the Pennsylvania State University, where he was elected to Phi Beta Kappa, the University of Tel Aviv in Israel, and the University of Pittsburgh, receiving degrees in international politics and law while being certified in Middle East studies. After living and studying abroad, first in the Middle East and then Southeast Asia, Lewis returned home to practice law. He's a columnist in the New Bethlehem Leader Vindicator and currently lives, writes, and practices law in and around Pittsburgh. Now you can visit Joseph Max Lewis at his Amazon author page or go to his website or Twitter. There you go. There's some of his titles right there. He's part of the Declaration of Independence series, Separation of Church and State, and Baghdad Burning. All right, where are we at now? It is 9 o'clock. And Sandy Siever's post should be popping up on the Facebook page and on Twitter. Hasn't cycled yet. Okay. Let's go through some of the comments here. Sue, as far as Roberta Rocious's ebook, Joy Ross Davis loves the cover. Sue says she can see a lot of YAs enjoying it. Pamela Horner, perfect for the time. Murray Pure, he says goodbye to everybody. It was very kind of him. And we hope he has a very nice week. Let's see what we got here. Sue has a comment on Linda Mazzucci's What is a Hero? Such a relevant question these days when everyone seems to be called a hero at one point or another. To me, a hero is someone who overcomes daunting odds and in the process makes a beyond the norm difference in the lives of others. It's a pretty nice comment. Okay. I'm just scrolling down, people. There may be another comment here. Let's see. All right, Carolyn Orvitz has weighed in on a cover. She goes with A. Okay, now, one thing I haven't done this evening, besides read June Foster's, some of her reading sample, I haven't played the audio sample for James J. Griffin's Faith in the Law, which is the featured audiobook this week. So I would like to do that right now. On the other side of this, I'm going to read some of June Foster's reading sample from her soon to be released novel. And then we'll just recap the evening and get to George Taylor's podcast this week for the historical stories. So here we are, the audio sample of James J. Griffin's Faith in the Law, narration by George Taylor, voice actor.
Helping Hands Press is proud to present an audiobook version of Faith in the Law by best-selling author James J. Griffin and narrated for you by George Taylor of narrationbygeorge.com. Faith in the Law is set in old Texas, with twin brothers. One's a lawman, a Texas Ranger, the other a Catholic priest. When the lawman brother is severely wounded by one of the men he is after, his priest brother takes on his identity to bring the outlaw to justice. And so begins Faith in the Law, Volume 1, The Ambush. Let's listen to an excerpt. Texas Ranger Casimir Jankowski knew the setup of the facilities as well as he knew the house where he and Tad had grown up. He put his bay and white pinto gelding Warsaw into an empty stall in the stable behind the rectory, headed inside to clean up at the kitchen sink, then joined his brother in the dining room. Tad was already seated at the table with his two assistants, Fathers Noble Bach and Robert Piontek. Anna Bilyankowski, the widowed housekeeper, was just beginning to serve them. They started to stand up when Chaz entered. "Howdy, y'all. Don't bother getting up," he ordered. "Let's just eat. I've had a long, hard ride, and I'm starved." "Hello yourself, Chaz," Father Bach said. "You're looking well. It's good to see you back home." "Yes,
It is,
Father Piontek agreed. We've missed you, Chaz. Will you be staying long? I'm afraid not, Chaz answered. The Rangers keep me on the move.
That's a real shame, Mrs. Bilyanowski said. Katie Markowitz is still single, you know. She never had eyes for any other man but you, Kazimir Jankowski. It's time you settled down with a good woman like Katie and started raising a family.
Maybe someday, but not quite yet, Chaz replied. Not until Texas is rid of the outlaws riding roughshod over her and making life miserable for decent citizens. Perhaps once Texas is safe for honest, hard-working folks, I'll be able to settle down. But until that happens, I'll keep writing for the Rangers.
You'll probably get yourself killed first, Mrs. Bilyanowski said with a sigh.
You could be right, but I sure hope not, Chaz answered. Enough of this conversation, Father Jankowski ordered. My prodigal brother is home, and no matter how short his visit, it's cause for celebration. And we've been fasting all night so we can say the Masses and receive Holy Eucharist, so we're just as hungry as you are, Chaz. We could talk later. Therefore, let's say grace and eat. You too, Anna, join us.
All right, Father.
Chaz and Anna took their seats, then all bowed their heads. Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty, through Christ our Lord. Amen, they prayed. Breakfast was ham, bacon, eggs, crusty rye bread with butter, and hot coffee. It was eaten mostly in silence. Once they were done and the concluding grace was said, Chaz and Tad went into the rectory's parlor.
So, Chaz, tell me what's on your mind, Tad ordered.
It's that obvious, huh?
It certainly is. Something's bothering you. I'm glad to see you home, but you rarely return without a reason.
You're right, of course. You always did see clear through me, Tad, and you through me. I guess that comes with being twins. So spill it already, then we can catch up on the past few months.
Okay. You know there's been a whole lot of outlawry going on west of here. I don't mean the usual rustling, horse-thieving, and bank and stagecoach robberies. Tad, there's wholesale murder happening, land stolen, trains wrecked, even women and children aren't safe.
Sounds like a job for the Rangers, all right.
Tad, I'm serious. I've been trying to figure out who's behind all this for months, and I finally have. I just need to get the proof.
I'll have that shortly, and as soon as I do, I'll put an end to this trouble once and for all.
If anyone can, it's you, Chaz. But are you certain you can handle this single-handed?
I have to. Don't have a choice. I can't trust anyone, not even my fellow Rangers. Once this breaks loose, it'll have repercussions all the way to the state capital.
I see. And I understand. Care to tell me who you're after? I can keep a secret, you know. Goes with being a priest, just like the seal of the confessional. If you reveal his name, my lips are locked.
Chaz shook his head.
Much as I'd like to confide in someone, it wouldn't be safe for you to know. If anyone's going to get his dupa shut off, it'll be me, not you. Don't worry. I know what I'm doing.
You know that. I'll be fine.
I'll pray that you will be.
How soon do you have to leave?
I'll be riding out first thing in the morning.
Good. That means we can have at least one night to visit.
The two brothers, one a clergyman, the other a lawman, spent the rest of the day and far into the night talking over what each had been doing during Chaz's absence and reminiscing about old times. It was well after midnight before they went to bed. Despite the late night, however, Chaz was in the saddle the next morning even before the sun had cleared the eastern horizon. His brother watched him leave with a prayer on his lips.
Watch over my brother, Lord, and keep him from harm, Tad said. I ask this in the name of Jesus Christ, our Savior, and Mary, his blessed mother. Amen.
Be sure to find Faith in the Law by James J. Griffin at myhelpinghandspress.com or look it up on narrationbygeorge.com/books.
All right, we're back. You're listening to the G-Zone. We are simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday Party. I want to thank everybody on Facebook and Twitter for all their nice comments and participation. While we were gone, Joseph Max Lewis's featured paperback just popped up. And there's some comments here. Sue says, love a good thriller. I know she does. She reads a wide variety of genres. She's been on the G-Zone a number of times. You can just go back through the archives. She was on recently. It's a National Foster Care Month. So I think that was last Monday. You can go back and catch her. Joseph Maxwell says, this was my first novel, and I remember how worried I was about the quality of the paperback. Helping Hands Press puts out first-class stuff, and I appreciate it. This is my favorite. Let's see. Marcelo Jack says, nice cover, clear font. Gives a feeling of antiquity. Joseph Max is thanking everybody for the shares and stuff like that. Sandy Siever's ebook bundle popped up. I see Lenny Schwab's in the house. And Baxter Campbell. A few other stalwarts here. Let's see what we got going here. Some nice comments. For Surviving Jamaica, Roberta Brocious' ebook that is right now at Helping Hands Press store as a pre-sale for $2.99. The rest of the evening, what we got going on here is Tracy Krause, I read. Tony Helling's post, I read. Flora Regatta, book two in her Where Your Heart Meets God is available in the Helping Hands Press store as pre-sale right now. That'll be ready on May 28th. A lot of people enjoyed Flora's first devotional, and that devotional, book one, will be part of the Uplifting Devotionals, book four, and she'll be part of book five also. The one thing that I didn't do was read a little bit from June Foster's sample for Misty Hollow, her pending novel release. This is a contemporary romance. Now, in the body of the post are the cover choices that June has. To date, there's been most have voted for C. There have been a few for A, but they want the fonts and the colors changed a bit. But right now, C is in the lead. If you want to weigh in on that, please leave a comment on the post or in the contact form. A few things I wanted to point out on the blog today. New things on the right sidebar. There is a new widget from Blog Talk Radio. You can see, as I said last night, Leighton Green and Tori Allen were on with me. Melody Balthaser was on with me on Tuesday. But then last week, all you got to do is click on Sue discussing National Foster Care Month. Boom, we'll take you right to the show. Last week's George Taylor, his first part of his historical novel podcast right there. And last week's Thirsty Thursday. And prior to that, I had interviewed Colleen Cobble. She is the CEO of the ACFW. She was nice enough to come back on the show. Been on the show a number of times. So you can listen to any of the podcasts in their entirety by just clicking on them. You can see the Twitter feed for HHP right now. We're pretty much in real time. You can see Joseph Max Lewis's cover right there. You scroll down. I usually read off what the top 10 posts are. If you're on the left sidebar, popular posts. Number one is Murray Puer's novel, A Soft Morning. That'll be out next week. Number two is Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's Sweetwater River. Number three, Michelle Huey's Volume 4, Tucson Two-Step. Let's see, number four, the cover choice is for William Tash's Backslide. Now, I was just talking to William Tash today. Backslide will be probably in pre-sale next week, and the audiobook will be, Helping Hands Press is going to try to release the audiobook simultaneously with the ebook. That may all happen for the week of May 28th, so just stay tuned. Next week, we'll see what's going on. Number five, read the beginning of Joseph Max Lewis's Baghdad Burning. You can get the sample on that. Last week, I think this was right around number 9 or 10. I was moved up to number 6. Listen to the audiobook sample of Joy Ross Davis's A Sutler of Petersburg. That was volume 1 of Murray Puer's Let Freedom Ring series. Meet Tony Helling. Next up, listen to the Sunrise and Sweetland author team. They were here on the G-Zone on April 13th. You can listen to that in the entirety. Just click on that and go ahead and find the link in the body and just go ahead and tune in or go here through to the archives on the G-Zone. Tony Helling was nice enough to come up with some interesting ads for the voice of Ada Stamen. Some of them are pretty humorous. I love Tony's sense of humor. That's number 9 and number 10. You can read the reading sample for William Tash's Backslide. So they're the top 10 posts on the Helping Hands Press blog. Now you go down the other sidebars here, you can see the blog archives as well as some of the blogs the Helping Hands Press authors have. You can see some of the thumbnails as well as the posts themselves. Just go ahead and click and go and enjoy. We'll see where we're at now. I'm going to read a little bit of June Foster's story. And then what I'm going to do is recap the evening, and we're going to get right to George Taylor's podcast. Okay. Let's see. Oh, yeah, that is. I did a lot of stuff out of order, and I'm confusing myself as I left the Facebook page. Okay. So without further ado, this is June Foster's some of the beginning of Misty Hollow. Molly Cambridge's car bounced and bumped with each rut on a narrow dirt road. Thick old growth forest obscured the light. Further down, leaves on a stand of birch trees shimmered in the wind. A gust rocked a 10-year-old Mazda, sending Molly's pulse pounding. Storms in the mountains could be fierce even in the summer months. Ahead, low concrete guardrails bordered the sides of a bridge. Molly peered out the windshield at a rising creek. The muddy water threatened the banks as it rushed and rippled on the way to lower ground. She gripped the steering wheel until her fingers turned white. How easy it would be for the wind to sweep her light car over the sides and into the rushing stream. She clenched her jaw. Maybe I should have been content staying in Nashville. No, she had to follow her heart. The red Mazda zigzagged across the narrow wooden bridge and jutted along the road's curves through shadowy maples. Ahead, a rusty sign attached to a metal pole read Misty Hollow, 0.5 miles. Almost there. A blast of air pitched the car, nearly jerked the steering wheel from her hands. She swerved and barely avoided plummeting down the cliff. Her heart went wild, synchronized with the velocity of the wind. Drops of rain seized the quarters, pelted the windshield. Sorry about that, folks. Drops of rain the size of quarters pelted the windshield, and the Mazda swayed again. Molly squinted, trying to see through waves of water, distorted her view ahead. Lightning split the darkened sky, and thunder boomed overhead. Nothing to do now but pull aside the road and wait it out. Calm down, girl. It'll be over soon. A chill traversed her spine. The soil on the side of the road was a mucky mess. No way she could pull over here. Something darted from the tree line in front of her and stopped. Hands clammy on the steering wheel, she slammed on the brakes. The Mazda's back tires skidded in the mud. The headlights reflected a back black and white shape. She held her breath, ahead to look at where she'd end up. Finally, she dared to peek through her fingers. A young calf, ears protruding, blinked terror-struck eyes. She rolled down the window and gasped at the creature. Raindrops splattered the dashboard and dotted her arm all the way to her clenched fist. Hey, what are you doing out here in the rain? An ear-splitting whoop rocked the car. Her uncontrolled scream rushed into the fragrance of evergreen trees, filling the air. She squeezed her eyes shut and held her breath. When she dared open them again, pine needle branches, like a prickly green car cover, blanketed the windshield, which had splintered into a dozen jagged lines. She cut the engine and peered to the left, the only space not obstructed by the evergreen. About 20 feet across the road, an old wooden fence hugged the tree line. The calf, nothing more than a distant memory, must have headed for safety from the falling debris. A few feet up, a gate opened to a dirt path leading to what looked like a farm with a couple of mountain cabins and a weather-worn barn beyond. A man jogged along the driveway toward her, then lost footing and staggered in the strong wind. He cupped his hand around his mouth. Hey, you okay? He yelled. Molly clutched the handle and yanked, but the door wouldn't budge. Slamming her shoulder hard against it accomplished nothing except pain shooting down her arm. Hot tears and a trapped sensation suffocated her. Okay, I'll admit it. Dad reminded me 100 times Misty Hollow was nothing like Nashville. She ignored the urge to panic and chewed a fingernail on her pinky. A hunk of a guy pulled his dinghy John Deere cap further down and side her handle. After a couple tugs, it screeched open, and he sloshed backward and offered his hand. "Let me help you." The man's gentle voice diminished some of her frustration and alarm. His strong grip pulled her out. Molly limped onto the wet, potholed road, her tennis shoes soaked. I almost ran over a cow. The guy shook his head. "I'm sorry about Flora's calf. I seen him running along the road. Becca will be back directly." And you can keep reading on down. Sounds like a wonderful novel. It'll be available for pre-sale in the Helping Hands Press store next week. And folks will be able to enjoy Misty Hollow very soon. Just to recap the evening, before I play George Taylor's new podcast, we'll see what we have going on this evening. We started out with the prayer, the opening prayer. Patty J. Smith's interview with Joy Ross Davis. In the Helping Hands Press store right now, the Uplifting Devotionals Book 4 is available for pre-sale right now. The author team is Murray Pure, Patty J. Smith, Michelle Huey, Flora Regatta, Sue Badeau. All different viewpoints, all wonderful devotionals. They'll all be together in one e-book that'll be available May 28th. You can get on pre-sale right now. I just did the reading sample for June Foster. We played the audiobook sample for Pamela Horner's new release audiobook, Rats, Pumpkins, and other fine stuff. That is a YA fantasy type book. Carolyn Orvitz, we showed off her full jacket cover for her paperback, The Literature Guides, a complete series, 3rd through 8th grade. She was also nice enough to be on the show here with me discussing it and telling folks more about The Literature Guides. We have new ebook bundles for Michelle Trossel and Sandy Siever. Michelle Trossel's is Wondering About Weather, Both Rain and Snow. Now, that is $1.49 in the Helping Hands Press store right now. Sandy Siever's bundle has Fay Katrina and also The Flying Banana. That is also $1.49. The featured audio book this week is James J. Griffin's Faith in the Law. We played that audio sample. There's a cover comparison for Marcia Lee Laycock. Folks are pretty split on that. Played the audio sample for Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples. That will be available in its entirety next week, during next week's Thirsty Thursday. And I did repost by Linda Mizucci, Tracy Krauss, Tony Hilling. Tomorrow there will be posts by Patty J. Smith, Carolyn Orvitz, and Melanie Jansky in the Helping Hands Press blog. Let's see. The feature paperback this week is Joseph Max Lewis's The Diaries of Pontius Pilate. Roberta Brocious's presale for Surviving Jamaica has just started. That's in the HHP store. That ebook is $2.99. And also Flora Regatta's Where Your Heart Meets God's Book 2. That is a presale right now, 99 cents. And that takes me to George Taylor's new podcast this week. And if I can get to the blog post on it. Here we are. What George has coming up for us here is: the West of the mid-1800s was mired in conflict over the issue of slavery. Against this backdrop, C.Q. Scafidi brings us The Outlaw and Chain, Bleeding Kansas. This conflict plays a role in this action-filled novel, and Scafidi shares much about Bleeding Kansas. Never heard of it? Some background and some tantalizing excerpts from the novel are featured in the podcast. All right, without further ado, we're going to have George Taylor talking about C.Q. Scafidi's Bleeding Kansas and other historical stuff. So take it away, George.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. We're in the middle of talking about historical fiction. Last week, we talked about two books. The first, the Declaration of Independence series, John Hancock, looked at the time of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We met John Hancock, whose signature is so prominent on this document, and listened to a segment on his struggles with the issue of slavery.
Our second featured novel was The Sutler of Petersburg. This took us to the Civil War and the Battle of Petersburg. We met the fictional sutler Tucker D and discovered something about the real role of sutlers in the time of this conflict. And you can still find this podcast on my website. It's narrationbygeorge.com. Click on podcasts. Today we're going back out west, and actually to the west of the 1800s, the mid-1800s. We're headed to what would become Missouri to meet Samuel Winchester, the hero of our series, Outlaw Unchained. The episode I recorded is entitled Bleeding Kansas. Have you heard that term before, Bleeding Kansas? Well, the term comes straight out of our history. It was actually coined by Horace Greeley to describe what was happening in Kansas in the mid-1800s, and to sell newspapers. In the mid-1800s, the nation was becoming more divided over the issue of slavery, particularly in the territories. The Kansas-Nebraska Act repealed a ban on slavery in the northern portion of the old Louisiana Territory to allow the settlers of these territories to decide their position on the slave question. Kansas became the target of both sides in an attempt to decide this question. The two sides squared off in a sometimes violent contest. Many historians have pointed to the events in Kansas at the time as the place where the Civil War actually began. While the conflict was serious, there was sensational attention given to it by the press in the East, hence the coining of the phrase Bleeding Kansas. In fact, says the Kansas Historical Society, Kansas was not nearly so bloody as the appellation implies, so there was sensational journalism even then. It is against this background that C.Q. Scafidi has penned his episode of The Outlaw Unchained. Samuel Winchester, as a former officer in the Army, has been wrongly accused of killing a family in Texas. He has escaped his jailers and is seeking to clear his name. In order to do that, he must meet with a man in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Being an escaped convict with a price on his head, he faces more than a few obstacles to get to Kansas. He manages to grab a ride with a gun runner for the abolitionists, a man by the name of Cyrus. They form an uneasy partnership. Take a listen to this excerpt from The Outlaw Unchained, Bleeding Kansas by C.Q. Scafidi. The two were silent for most of the ride. Sam could sense that Cyrus was still not convinced of his feelings regarding the abolitionist movement. Sam knew the only way to convince him would be to confide in him fully, putting himself at risk of capture, just like placing a gun in a stranger's hand, as Cyrus had done for him. The $500 bounty alone would more than compensate Cyrus for his trip across the state of Missouri and make it profitable to turn him in. Sam knew he was taking a huge chance, but he felt he had no choice. "Cyrus, when I said we needed to talk, I wasn't referring to your cargo or why you were carrying it." Cyrus turned to him with a quizzical look.
"I don't understand, Sam. What'd you want to talk to me about?"
"On our last stop, inside the general store, there was a wanted poster on the wall with my name and picture on it."
"A wanted poster?"
Cyrus replied incredulously.
"Are you trying to tell me that you're a fugitive from the law? That I've been harboring a fugitive?"
"Wrongfully accused," Sam blasted back. "I am on a mission to clear my name. Someone or some group has conspired to frame me for a murder I did not commit. I've been set up and sent to hell for a crime I did not commit. You seem more concerned about whether I support the abolitionist movement. Cyrus, I was rescued by the son of an escaped slave, Billy Cypress, son of Leon Cypress, former slave and honorary member of the Seminole tribe. I'm with you 100% on the issue of slavery. It's a huge injustice, just like the injustice being done to me. I am with you. Are you with me?" Cyrus seemed to be studying Sam's rugged face, searching for any clue as to the truthfulness of what he was telling him. How could he be certain? Then he had a sudden flash of memory.
He had handed this man a fully loaded weapon at camp on their first night on the Santa Fe Trail. Sam could have shot him and stolen all he had. He hadn't. Cyrus knew then, as now, Sam was a man who could be trusted.
"Wrongfully accused, were you? Tell me what happened."
As the two rode together, Sam detailed his entire life's saga, his graduation from West Point, his achievements in engineering, his work with the Army in Texas, the love of his life, Emmeline, and her wonderful father, Colonel Edelman. Then, finally, the court-martial proceedings for his trumped-up murder charges. Cyrus listened in silence after hearing the full details of Sam's story. He was fully convinced of his innocence.
"I've something else to tell you," Sam silently muttered.
"What now?"
Cyrus exclaimed. "Try not to get angry with me, but I have a sneaking suspicion that those were no ordinary outlaws we gunned down at the creek."
"What do you mean?"
Cyrus asked. "When I saw the wanted poster, I realized that those men were more than likely a posse sent out to capture me. I never would have placed you in danger knowingly under any circumstances. I thought I was traveling undercover after I left New Orleans. I had no idea they had picked up my trail in St. Louis, but according to the poster, they did." Cyrus sat silently listening to Sam. He finally let out a laugh.
"What is so funny?" Sam asked with confusion. "I wanted to confide in you about the very same thing. You see, I'm running guns to fight the pro-slavery border ruffians and their war against the abolitionists. I was convinced that was who had attacked us, and they were after my cargo. I lied when I told you I was concerned about frontier outlaws. It was the border ruffians that had me worried, and with good cause.
So we both had our own ideas about the shooting and were afraid to tell one another? Now that is kind of funny. Now you have me wondering if you may be right." Sam chuckled. The moment of levity shared by the two dusty travelers was to be short-lived. As the two approached St. Joseph, or St. Joe, their luck was soon to change. St. Joseph was founded on the Missouri River by Joseph Robideau, a local fur trader. The town was officially incorporated in 1843 and was where pioneers would stay and purchase supplies before they would head out west in wagon trains. The town was a very bustling place, and the heart of the growing conflict between pro-slavery advocates and the abolitionists wishing to make Kansas a free state. A section from The Outlaw Unchained, Bleeding Kansas, by C.Q. Scafidi. Now, while this book is not necessarily a novel about history, like our feature last week on John Hancock was, the author has set the novel in the midst of some very real history, which plays a role in the plot. Listen to this next section of the book. We're going to meet Philip Stanley, who has his own story to tell. Philip Stanley was a fat, jovial, ruddy Irishman who came to St. Joe's by way of Boston, Massachusetts. He was a gentle giant with a perfectly manicured handlebar mustache and a bright red head of hair. The hair collar only highlighted the redness of his cheeks and nose, common to those Irishmen that were inclined to over-imbibe. His journey from Dublin to Boston to St. Joseph was a circuitous one. His family had immigrated when he was a boy and settled in Catholic Irish Boston, where his father got work on the docks of Boston Harbor. Philip had felt the sting of discrimination. Upon arrival in the New World, the Irish Catholics were treated very much like the African slaves and were only offered the most menial work for slave wages. The treatment received by Philip in his early years was what nurtured in him a growing hatred of the institution of slavery, Massachusetts had been a free state since 1783, well before the arrival of the Stanleys to Boston. His mother taught him that slavery was indeed a sin, and not something which good Catholics should ever engage. As the fight against slavery swept across the country, the dividing line was being drawn, and it went straight across the territory of Kansas. Indeed, the Kansas Territory was the final battle for slavery within a specific state. The battle over whether Kansas should be a slave state or a free state was waged between the border ruffians and the abolitionists, most of whom were flooding into the area to swing the vote in favor of free state status. The military was traditionally in favor of slavery, especially in the Kansas Territory. Philip felt certain that the military was aiding the border ruffians in their war against the northern abolitionists settling in Kansas Territory. The media, specifically Horace Greeley, coined the name of this proxy war over slavery, Bleeding Kansas. It was this struggle that had brought Philip to the Kansas Territory. Philip was one of the many northern settlers whose sole purpose for moving west was not for greater opportunity, but to impact the elections regarding slavery in the newest states in the Union. He found the battleground to be along the border of the state of Missouri and the divided territory of Kansas in towns along the Santa Fe Trail, like Independence and St. Joseph. As he sat at his desk and shuffled through the daily reports, he heard a knock on his door.
"Mr. Stanley?"
"Yes."
"It's Cyrus Borden. You wanted to see me."
Philip leapt to his feet and immediately opened the door.
"Yes, Mr. Borden, please do come in and have a seat."
He smiled broadly at Sam as he quickly shut and locked the door. "I trust your accommodations are satisfactory, Mr. Borden."
"Yes, housekeeping comes a little early, but..."
Philip interrupted him in a low, stern voice.
"Listen, we both know you're not Cyrus. He was a friend of mine. What are you doing here, using his name, and what do you know about his whereabouts and my cargo?"
Sam was taken aback. He felt there was a possibility that the two had known one another. He immediately came clean.
"Cyrus is, or was, my friend as well. I only came here because he told me about you, this place, and what you do here."
"What we do here?" Philip gave him a look of curiosity.
"Look, I am fully aware that this hotel hides a secret."
"You are you? What secret would that be?"
"Cyrus told me about the secret annex, the meetings, and the cargo. I support your efforts and came to you for help."
Philip gave the gangly but freshly washed stranger a good look up and down while attempting to determine whether he was trustworthy and telling him the truth. Realizing that the stranger could have killed him by now if he had wanted to, he decided to take a chance and hear what the stranger had to say.
"Before you go any further, let's take a walk around the hotel. These walls have eyes and ears, if you know what I mean."
"Fine by me," Sam agreed, and the two left the office and moved towards the saloon and restaurant. As Sam had expected, beyond the restaurant was a door to the kitchen which led to a pantry door which was disguised as a wall panel. Once inside the pantry, a corridor led to a hidden staircase that went down to what looked like a large ballroom or some kind of ceremonial setting with flags and strange symbols on the wall.
"We could have real privacy here. I don't like prying eyes or ears. This is about as safe as it gets here in St. Joe. Have a seat here and tell me who you really are."
You'll have to acquire the audiobook or the book to find out how all of this turns out. It's called The Outlaw Unchained, Bleeding Kansas. It's by C.Q. Scafidi. It's narrated by George Taylor of Narration by George. You can find more information about the book and hear another audio sample at my website. It's narrationbygeorge.com. Either click on Books on the menu and scroll down to the icon for this book, or do a search from the bottom of the homepage for The Outlaw Unchained. You can also find the book at myhelpinghandspress.com. Again, do a search for The Outlaw Unchained. Next week's podcast will be a bit different. Instead of audiobooks next week, I'm going to share a blog with you from
A rather amazing young man with some interesting spiritual insights. If you are single, I particularly invite you to join me next week when the Narration by George podcast will be new on Wednesday. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter. I go by the handle @narrationbygeo. I invite you to like my Facebook page or follow me on Pinterest. On both of those, it is Narration by George. Your comments are welcome on any of these forums. Don't forget that what's going on with Narration by George can also be found on my website, narrationbygeorge.com. And be sure to join me if you're in the Kansas City area. Be sure to join me for the Here Now Festival. That's the weekend of June 11th. That's a Thursday through the following Sunday. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. The Narration by George podcast is the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. See you next Wednesday when we are again new. Talk to you then. Bye.